Did you know a hawk moth can make itself look like a small pit viper? Or you can order a pizza in New York City that cost $2,700. I'm Jill Nadeau. Happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network today. Our first guest is a senior editor for National Geographic Kids. She is Shelby Lees, and she'll be telling us about some of the interesting facts that are included in the new book, The Coolest Stuff on Earth, A Closer Look at the Weird, Wild, and Wonderful. We'll also find out what goes into creating one of these books. Shelby, are you there?
I'm here.
It's so great of you to be with us today. What a wonderful book.
Yeah, isn't it fun? It was such a joy to put together.
I'll bet. Well, before we talk about the book, why don't you tell us a little bit about your job at National Geographic, because I'm kind of jealous. Although, I have a great job.
I might be a little biased, but I think it is one of the most fun jobs on Earth. Because one thing that we always strive for is to be surprised ourselves by information. And, you know, if we're surprised and we're, you know, turning to each other, you know, back when we were in the office or, you know, over Slack now and saying, oh my God, did you know?
Right.
Have you seen this? We have a blast as a team. And, you know, I think that reflects in the books because we love what we do and we love what we put together.
So what's your favorite part of your job then?
Well, my favorite part is learning. Uh-huh. We work with some incredibly talented authors and top-notch researchers who, do a lot of the legwork to put these books together. And so when they come to us, you know, with an outline or even with an idea for a book or, you know, in the manuscript where they've got all the facts there, and you sit there and you think, wait, is that right? And then you do a little research yourself and you're like,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I leave every single day knowing something that I had never known before.
Very cool. I feel the same way listening to public radio. Plug. I have a friend who's a children's librarian. I mentioned that I was going to be talking to you about this book, and she just loves the National Geographic Kids series. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the series of books that you've been doing?
So the book we're going to talk about today, Coolest Stuff on Earth, is one of our jam-packed fact books. So, you know, I think you guys are familiar with our Weird But True series. We've got 10 numbered books of those and then some topic-specific like Weird But True Dinosaurs and Weird But True Gross. And these books are just chock full of the most random information on Earth and, you know, things that you thought you knew, but maybe you didn't quite actually know, or just brand new ways of looking at things, brand new information. And there's something in here for everyone, from a toilet museum to astronauts out in space.
Right. Now, how do you go ahead and make your books appealing to kids? What are some of the basic elements?
The biggest thing is having shareable, snackable information. You know, in a book like this, we want to keep facts short and surprising so that you read it and you're like, I need to tell everybody I know about this. we use a lot of fun fonts to bring a lot of energy to the text. And of course, our National Geographic. So we try to find the most amazing, eye-catching photos. So when you're flipping through the book, something will catch your eye right away.
And it does. It's bright colors and beautiful photography and, like you said, little bite-sized pieces of information. A good book that you can just open up anywhere, and there's some really cool information here. So tell us a little bit about the process of putting together a book like this. What happens first? Does someone come to you with an idea?
So usually, we come up with the ideas in-house, and that could mean anything from anyone on the team just, you know, raising their hand and saying, hey, you know, did you ever think about doing this? Or this would be a cool book. Or a photo editor who finds an amazing photo and says, do you think we should do a book about this? We also do brainstorms where the whole team just basically spends the day brainstorming all the cool ideas we can come up with. And at the heart of it, these books are really about what we find fascinating. You know, as I said, we share facts all the time that we found. So you never know what's going to spark an idea. And then once we have the idea for the book, we hire an author. We do have some books that come to us from authors because, you know, authors have absolutely amazing ideas. But a book like this, we go and we hire the author. And we work with some really amazingly talented writers who know how to not only find facts and research the facts, but, you know, phrase them just right so that you get that really punchy text, you know, almost like a headline, like clickbait almost, mm-hmm. you know, where you get the essence of the information there, but it's short and quippy enough that it's easy to remember and easy to share. And so then once the author puts together their outline, they send that to me, to the editor. And, you know, one of the hardest parts of my job is having to go through the outline and saying, well, that's cool, but yeah. Is it cool enough? And, you know, so I have to cross them down or, you know, that's cool, but we already had 7 dog facts in this book. So I think you're going to have to leave that one out. And then again, because, you know, we put such an emphasis on the visual, I send the outline to the photo editor assigned to the book, and they go through it and they say, you know, well, that's a super cool fact, but there are no good photos of it. So, okay. You know, we find that is a problem a lot with deep sea creatures because they are so alien and so crazy and so cool, but the images that exist of them are not great, you know, because they are deep in the ocean where there's no light.
Sure.
So, you know, sometimes we have to cut really cool facts just because there's not a good visual to go with them. And then the author is off writing. They put together the manuscript, which gets sent to a fact checker or to experts. You know, even our most simple books, we have checked by fact checkers and experts in the field to make sure, even though they sound super fun, we get all of our facts exactly right. And then it goes to design, where the designers add their magic and bring the life and the energy to the visuals that you see.
Right, because if we can't trust National Geographic to get it right, I mean, who can we trust? That's awesome. So let's just talk about the book now. So like we said, it's called The Coolest Stuff on Earth, A Closer Look at the Weird, Wild, and Wonderful. Now, what age group is this actually written for?
It's written for ages 8 to 12, but, you know, it's, I think, great for absolutely everyone. You know, I had the book open the other day and noticed behind my shoulder, my husband was reading over my shoulder, and, you know, under his breath going, whoa, what?
Yeah.
Would you like to read the book? So, you know, it's designed for ages 8 to 12, but, you know, even, you know, younger kids than that, they might need a little help to read it. It's a great family exercise to read together, you know, flip through the pages, pick a random page and read it together. And then other kids who will just devour the whole thing beginning to end.
I thought that too. And I thought it was a good jumping off point to learn more about the things that you talked about. So if it's a deep sea fish of some sort, let's do more digging on this and let's find out more. Let's do research. So I would see that older kids could definitely do that too.
Absolutely. And you know, we're in the golden age of information and research right now, where you can take any of these topics or any crazy idea you have and research it. You know, it's not like the old days where if you wanted to know something, you had to go find an encyclopedia, read the encyclopedia. You know, that's not interesting and it takes a long time. And now, you know, one of my favorite facts in the book is that a dog can shake a pound of water out of its fur in less than a second. So, you know, that is an amazing fact. And if you want to know more about how it is that dogs actually shake the water out of their fur, why it's so important, and different breeds actually shake at different velocities, you can dig way into that and find that information.
Yeah, absolutely. It just opens your mind up. Now, you find that kids that read your books, that like your books, are more likely then to like reading in general, or does that help them pique their interest in reading other things?
Absolutely. You know, even struggling readers are still really curious about the world. And so when you can hook them in with facts that are just so fascinating, and, you know, in a book like this, we try to cover, everything. You know, you mentioned the gold-covered pizza that you can get in New York City. That, you know, we've got that. We've got a toilet museum in India. So, you know, you hear people say you need the right book for the right kid at the right time to get them to want to read. And mm-hmm. So a book like this, even if you've got kind of a reluctant reader, they're going to find something in there that catches their interest and makes them want to read and want to read more about it.
Right. Well, you better talk about that $2,700 pizza, because I think we've whetted everyone's appetite. Tell us about it.
Maybe whetted their appetite, although it doesn't sound like the most appealing pizza to me.
No, it doesn't.
But in New York City, it is a squid ink crust, which apparently you have to order this pizza 48 hours ahead of time. So if there's time for the crust to be made, then they import the cheese from Britain and the truffles from France, and it's covered in caviar, and then it's topped with edible gold leaf. So, yeah, it's definitely not like any other pizza you're going to eat.
No.
But, you know, for the adventurous who want to be dropping $2,700 on pizza.
Trying to impress somebody with that one. Yeah, for sure. I also mentioned the hawk moth, and I was just amazed by that picture, because when I was looking through glancing through, I'm like, oh, that's a cool looking snake. And then I read the caption, and it's not a snake, is it?
It's not. You know, actually, caterpillars have some of the most incredible camouflage, I think, of almost any animal. It's absolutely amazing. There's one that looks like bird poop. But the one we have in the book, the hawk moth caterpillar that you mentioned, it can puff up to make, I think it's its tail, look like a snake. And it's got, you know, kind of looks like a triangle with the big eyes and the markings and the colorings of a viper. So even though it's tiny because it's a caterpillar, apparently this works to scare off hungry predators.
I can understand that, because like I said, it does look like it, even though it's small. So we're talking about the new National Geographic Kids book, The Coolest Stuff on Earth, A Closer Look at the Weird, Wild, and Wonderful, with senior editor Shelby Lees. Jane Rotunda is our on-air producer today, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We are talking about the coolest stuff on Earth. Shelby Lees is here with us from National Geographic Kids. Shelby, let's actually take us a kind of a tour through the book. What kind of, you have divided into chapters, so talk about the different chapters that you have.
Sure. Yeah, you know, we wanted to literally cover the whole world and space in this book.
You did.
Yes. It's a pretty impressive feat. We talk about some marvels around the world, modern marvels. We actually shine some light on the Leaning Tower of Pisa, why it's leaning, and why when an earthquake came through that knocked down buildings around it, it actually kept standing. We take a tour around the world. We look at some amazing festivals. Like there's a cow dung flinging festival.
We know about that one, Shelby.
Oh, you do? Of course you do. We look at extraordinary animals. We talk about dolphins that actually have names. They name themselves. We look at history. We talk about the dodo. We talk about castles, science. One of my favorites is the Sailing Stones in Death Valley. There are these giant, I think, 700-pound rocks that seem to move all by themselves across the desert. And it took scientists decades to figure out how that was happening.
And what's cool about that, as I was looking at the pictures, there's like a little trail behind them. So
yeah,
it really says these stones moved. It's really cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost creepy. It's like these stones just have this long trail behind them. It's like, how did they do it? We talk about sports, which is always super fun, and money, and then some pretty crazy epic extremes. So we cover just about everything that you might want to know.
Well, that's a good thing, too, because one of those categories alone can get a kid interested in this book, and that will bring them to learn about other things, too, which is the important thing. So, I mean, this is an awesome gift for holidays coming up, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's great as a family activity that you can read together while you're home around the Christmas tree or the Thanksgiving turkey, or to send to a niece or nephew that you haven't seen for a bit and you're not sure what they might be into.
One of the things that really stood out with me, and I don't know why, but it was the goblin shark. Tell us a little bit about that. And for those who want to see, Google this thing, because it is weird looking, and I had no idea this existed.
Aren't those the craziest looking sharks you have ever seen? they are deep sea creatures, and their jaws are, like, their teeth are just, like, at all kinds of crazy angles. It's funny because, like, to us, these animals look absolutely crazy, but the way that they are built, you know, it helps them live in their world. So, the goblin shark, I said it's got, these weird teeth all over. It's got a long, long, pointy nose, but this helps it catch its prey in the deep, dark water.
And that's with a lot of our creatures. What we think is unusual, like you said, is to help them in the environment that they're in.
Yeah, which is a really fun way to learn about their environments and to learn about what makes all of these animals really special.
And we were talking about sharks, but another part that you have in there is about shark skin itself. And I really like the fact that I think you did an interview with someone, but how they're using how shark skin works to help keep barnacles off of boats. Talk a little bit how they're doing that.
Yeah, shark skin is one of the most amazing natural things out there. The field of biomimicry is using a natural phenomena to help us as humans. And the way shark skin works is it's made of denticles, which are, these very kind of smooth plates. And basically everything slides off them. So shipping companies have started coating the bottoms of their ships with a synthetic shark skin that barnacles can't stick to. They slide right off. Even the hospitals are starting to experiment with using a synthetic shark skin spray because even viruses and bacteria don't stick to it. So I don't believe that one has been rolled out into real life yet, but in theory, you should be able to spray every door handle in a hospital to keep bacteria and virus from sticking to it.
Well, that can't come any time too soon.
Yeah.
We did have a listener call in who couldn't stay on the line, but they wondered about the gold leaf pizza. With gold being a precious metal and the labor and environmental impact, how do you give disclaimers and context for things that might be controversial? That's a really good question, because I imagine that comes up.
It does. That is a great question. It comes up a lot, you know, especially being National Geographic, we do feel that we have a responsibility to delve into those kinds of things and talk about those kinds of things. You know, the answer is it kind of depends on the context and the fact. For example, the gold leaf pizza, you know, as you and I were just talking, it's kind of a novelty. You know, this is something that you are going to be able to order from your local pizza shop every Friday night. So, you know, in that sense, we didn't feel like it was important to have a disclaimer, because most people are not eating pizza. But, you know, sometimes there are other things that come up. You know, one thing that we do try and do is bring some attention to animals that people may have misconceptions about. Like, we were just talking about sharks, and there are so many awesome things about sharks. You know, we really want people to understand how cool they are and not to be afraid of them. You know, we also make decisions about what content goes into our books. We actually have a whole spread in this book about alternative energy.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, we want the coolest stuff on Earth. So we're not talking about your typical solar panels. We talk about a street lamp that runs on dog poop.
I saw that. It was crazy.
Isn't that amazing? You know, why that hasn't been rolled out everywhere, I don't know.
I don't either. Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. Yeah.
So we try and, you know, we try and balance the coolness, the funness, with, you know, making sure that we're always sharing environmentally responsible messages.
Okay. Well, we do have a call from John, and he's in Lake Mills. Hi, John.
Hey, I got a quick question here for your guests. A lot of the stuff that you're talking about sounds really interesting. Right now, before bed with our kids, you know, we read a couple of books, and then we watch like a 4 or 6 little video. It's called like a Mystery Dug. But it's something about, like, the natural world, something that's interesting. And I just wondered, did your guest have something like that, which is just like a short little video series or little videos that somebody could watch that's, like, 5 minutes long that would have all the things that she's talking about might go into a little bit of detail in that?
Okay. Thanks, John. Shelby?
Yeah. Check out kids.nationalgeographic.com, where we have tons of videos. You can also actually look at the National Geographic Kids YouTube channel, which has tons and tons of videos. And we've got a couple of fantastic series in there. We've got a Weird But True. There's actually a Weird But True TV show. So we've got clips from the Weird But True TV show. We've got Coolest Job on Earth that goes into different explorers and scientists and crazy jobs that you didn't know existed, explainer videos on science topics. So you can find all kinds of videos either on the Nat Geo Kids website or our YouTube channel.
Great. Well, thank you for that call, John. I'm glad you asked. I should have asked that myself. So that's great. And I've been to that website, and you're right. There is so much information out there. So that, again, would be a good resource for kids who are maybe doing their school from home these days.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of watching one before bed. What a fun way to wrap up the day.
Definitely, definitely. So let's talk about that blue volcano, because that was pretty cool. How does that work?
Yeah, you know what? There are so many fascinating volcanoes. You know, we always think of volcanoes as spewing red hot lava everywhere. But there are the blue volcano, there are mud volcanoes, there are on other planets ice volcanoes. You know, there are all kinds of ways that volcanoes are way more than what we think that they are. The blue volcano is a pretty specialized volcano. You're not going to find this in most places, but it's in Indonesia, and it is caused by the chemicals, the gases actually that are around the volcano. It's very sulfur rich, so that causes the eerie kind of blue lava explosion that you see, and it's actually less of an explosion and more of a running lava.
Uh-huh. So it in the blue, it comes from being close to the ocean, is that correct?
The sulfur gases, mm-hmm, that are in it that give it that color. Because, you know, metals have different colors. Like,
okay,
you know, when iron rusts, it's red. Actually, the way fireworks work in different colors,
sure,
is because of the different metals that,
mm-hmm,
are in it. So, so this is really more about the sulfur that's,
okay,
in it.
Well, for example, you're talking about other colors in nature, and there's a pink lake. I was taken aback. I mean, that must be where Barbie goes to vacation. But yeah, it is pink. And where does the pink come from?
That one, I believe, is bacteria that's in the lake, mm-hmm, that causes it to be pink. So you may not want to go swimming in it, but it makes for beautiful photos.
It does, especially now that you can do from up above with the drones so easily.
Yes.
Definitely cool pictures. So let's talk about some of the sports stuff, because you do have sports in there. So for some, you know, a kid who likes sports, this is, a good way to get them in. So what are some of the pointers for getting that 3-point shot?
Well, you know, I would love to be able to tell you that there's some kind of magic to it.
There's not.
There's not. You know, the magic is math, honestly. It's understanding the angles and the velocity. So, you know, you need to know where you're standing, you know, how tall the basket is, and so what angle and what speed you need to be tossing the ball. So, unfortunately, there's no magic. It's just a lot of practice and a lot of understanding angles.
And if you want to be good at sports, you should be good at math, right?
Absolutely. You know, kids may not think that they are related, but once you understand math, you're going to be, well, I can't say you'll be great at sports, but at least you'll understand.
Well, you'll be better, right? You'll be better.
You'll be better. You'll be better because you'll know what you need to do and what you need to practice to get where you need to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's talk about some of the bling. So you've got a chapter in here, I think, is it the money one? But you're talking about some of the extravagant things that people spend money on. Was there a favorite in that section that you stood out to you?
Oh, yeah, those are absolutely amazing. You know, we've got a blinged out cell phone case, which, I don't know, I feel like I dropped my phone.
I know, that's exactly what I thought. Yeah,
that was a really fun one. And a blinged out car that, you know, is covered in crystals.
Completely covered. Every
completely covered
area. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So those are really fun.
In that section, too, there's the hidden things on a $1 bill. And one has to do with the number 13. So where do we find that on a dollar bill?
Sure. Well, you know, there are all kinds of conspiracy theories about the dollar bill and what everything means. But the number 13 is actually really utilized on the bill, which, of course, comes from the 13 original colonies. It's not any kind of Illuminati or anything.
Right.
But you can find it hidden in some really interesting places, like the pyramid that's on the back of the bill. There are 13 layers in that pyramid, or on the front of the bill, the seal behind the word one has 13 stars in it. The eagle on the back has 13 stripes. So, you know, if you take a close look, you're going to find the number 13 built into a lot of the dollar bill, which makes sense for the history of our country.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought that was just amazing. And some of the extremes, too. Crocodiles, I've got a definitely better respect for them now than I did before I read this. Oh, my.
Well, good. That's, you know, that's what we aim for.
Yes. Yeah, crocodiles. Was there one, any particular ones that you were really fond of when you heard of them?
You know, one fact that really was surprising to me is, you know, when you go to museums, you see ancient Roman statues, and they're missing a lot of body parts, and you think, well, okay, they're hundreds of years old. But I did not know that Roman statues were actually built to be able to change the head out, you know, because these statues were carved into marble and were so intricate and time-consuming to do, the sculptors would basically create interchangeable heads so that, you know, anytime a new ruler came into power, they could just, you know, knock the old head off the statue, make a new head, and paste it on. So, you know, obviously those spots are a little bit weaker, which is why we've lost a lot of the heads now. But they were actually done that way by design.
That totally blew me away because I have a pretty good art background from college. No one ever told me that. No one apparently knew that. But it makes so much sense because it's like, well, why are the heads always missing of all things? So, yeah, very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Talk about the Kraken. We all know the Kraken now because of the Pirates movie, but what was that based on?
Yeah, so scientists believe now that the Kraken was really based on the giant squid, which, you know, makes sense because the giant squid is giant. You very rarely actually see one at the surface because they live deep, deep in the sea. But when they do come to the surface, they look absolutely strange and amazing. I believe there were some Dutch sailors actually who discovered one on a beach a couple centuries ago, which kind of started the whole Kraken mythology. So, you know, they are based on a real animal. And, you know, of course, you're not really going to see a giant squid coming up and attacking a ship anytime soon.
So you're safe.
Yes.
Yes. The other one that I was very interested in was the Vikings and the age-old question of, did they settle in the Americas? So what does the latest information say?
Yeah, so, we have found some Viking settlements in Newfoundland in Canada. So we do definitely know that they were here. The ancient sagas tell of them coming over. I think they called it Vinland. So they were definitely here. They were definitely settled. A few years ago, one of our explorers thought they had found another settlement, and there was a lot of excitement around it, and I think it turned out not to be quite what they were hoping. But, you know, at their core, Vikings were really explorers. They living, up north, farming was pretty hard. So that is what really pushed them to take to the seas and start looking for new lands.
And I thought it was interesting that they actually consider Newfoundland as a sort of resort. Because when you consider how much further south it is compared to where they were coming from, it is, you know, it's a resort. So very cool.
Compared to Greenland, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. As we wrap things up here, what kind of books are you working on right now? What's in the pike?
One of my favorite books that I'm working on right now is a fiction series, actually, fact-based fiction for our middle schoolers. It's a middle grade series by Valerie Tripp, who is the co-creator of the American Girls book series. And so this series is called Izzy Newton and the Smart Squad, and it's about a group of middle school girls who are all named for famous scientists. So we have Izzy Newton and Allie Einstein and Gina Carver and Charlie Darwin. It's a very diverse group of girls, and they all have, you know, their own kind of specialty, their own interest in science. And, you know, they're in sixth grade, so they're battling all of your typical middle school drama. But at the same time, they're also solving some mysteries that are going on in the school using their special scientific talents. And so that one has just been a blast. The first book just came out this fall, and the next one is coming next fall.
Oh, those sound like fun. Again, what are the names? the name of
Izzy Newton. Yeah, Izzy Newton and the Smart Squad is the name of the series.
I love the names. Hero. They're great. Yeah. Charlie Darwin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Got it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look for those. And again, you know, for anybody looking for really great gifts for kids this year, check out National Geographic Kids. And their newest one is called The Coolest Stuff on Earth, A Closer Look at the Weird, Wild, and Wonderful. Shelby, Lise, this has been such fun. Thank you for being with us.
It's been great. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to talk about the high cost of fast fashion. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller.